Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Casella's Prosciutto Speciale. Learn more at casellasalumi.com.
This week on Meat & Three, we continue our trade series with a piquant look at the many faces of the spice trade. From the high price tag of saffron to the ubiquity of chilies and the potential ripple effect that farmer protests in India may have on the global spice market.
You know, farmers are protesting because they feel like their lives and livelihoods are on the line.
You find it in a lot of cured foods, like cured meat and Parmesan cheese. You also find it in ripening foods, like ripe tomatoes are very high in MSG. So there's sources of it all over the natural world.
Tune in to Meat & Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
So welcome to another episode of Take Two, which is a new series I'm doing this year, where we're going back to previous guests, trying to figure out, you know, what they've been up to since we last spoke, what they're working on now, and especially what, you know, how they survived 2020. And this week I'm pleased to have Frida Muyambo back with me, and not in the same space, because last time we spoke, we were actually both in Lagos, right? We were both in Lagos, different times, and it's amazing how things change. But welcome back.
Thank you so much.
It's great to have you back. Last time we spoke, has it been 2 years? I feel like it's been a while. It's 2 years.
It was 2018. So wow.
We did a great, absolutely fantastic. It's one of the top episodes of all time. Great crash course.
Really?
Yeah, wow. It is.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I never told you this.
You know, no, you know, I think we've just been following. It was last summer we shared it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, extremely popular, because for anyone that hasn't listened to it yet, Frida did an absolutely incredible crash course on African foods and flavors, so much so that we ended up having a two-part episode because it was so good.
Remember
that we spoke for...
I remember that.
Yeah, we spoke for... quite a bit. I was trying to find the episode number, which I should have looked up for people that want to go back and listen. One second, I will find it. So it's episode 7 and episode 8. Very early on. Wow, yeah. 2018. Episode 7 and episode 8, for those who want to go back and listen to that full episode. It was really good. Frida did a good job of walking us around the continent, describing food flavors and profiles and history. And I was even listening to you back then, I was mind blown. Now we are back and wanting to catch up with you. First of all, like, how did you manage the last year, 2020? What was that like for you in terms of maybe the things you planned to do and how they turned out or not?
Oh my, so the last year, 2020, was interesting. I started off the year with a couple of girlfriends. We were doing our goal setting and vision boarding, which was amazing because I don't get to do that often. And it was just nice to have it on paper, listen to their big dreams and think, okay, let me try and get a serious hat on and... you know, actually not be afraid to put a goal down. So I remember having some goal. I wanted to save a certain amount of money. I wanted to, you know, start coming out. I don't know why I do this or feel this, but, you know, when people meet me, they're like, oh, you do this? I didn't know you do that. Mm-hmm. You don't promote yourself. You don't talk about it. And I thought, wow, I don't know how much more I can try and talk about it. Let me try. So I had said, you know, I it would be good to perhaps write a paper, contribute to some conferences or symposiums on food, you know, put a touch of African cuisine flavor to some conferences, or put an African face behind the information, because people are writing about African spices, people are writing about culture, but I find that they're doing it from their colonial perspective. Right. Why not? It's their story, you know, it's their story, it's their platform. So I thought I should do that. What else did I think I would do? Just get my projects off the ground, which will probably bring me back to something I had said on the episode with you a couple of years ago. But I had said I need to try and get more content, more filming done.
Right, I remember.
Professionally. So that was it. How it actually went, well, the world closed. Yeah. The borders closed here for 6 months, 6 or 7 months. Nigeria was closed. At the beginning of the year, I was ready to go. I had approached some companies. I had said, look, I want to do this kind of sort of food exhibition. Mm-hmm. And they were like, yeah, sure, write a proposal, come to us. It didn't happen, you know. We all went on lockdown, so that didn't happen. I didn't write any. Well, having said that, I did not write the papers that I thought I would write. This would be more geared towards academics, you know. But I actually did get to write some essays, you know, things that I wasn't expecting that actually. They came about, which is great. It's a great win. I wrote this article for Amex Essentials. It was just an introduction to West African food. It was basically an article introducing people who were none the wiser to West African food. That did really, really well. What else happened? A friend of mine, during lockdown, the world going virtual, whilst in some regards we lost out on opportunities, from another angle, it leveled the table. It brought us closer. Yeah. It got me into places I would otherwise not be able to access, either because of distance or because of my current family situation. So middle of the year, a friend of mine, she's like the head of infrastructure at a law firm, you know, in London. She said to me, she does Africa Week in her office every year, you know, because that's her contribution to diversity. We caught up and she said, listen, we're doing this thing virtually. We're going to have a podcast. Can we talk to you about food? Can we talk to you about the situation? This was also right in the heat of Black Lives Matters. And it seemed a lot of organizations, I mean, she's always been doing that. She's been doing that for years, but a lot of other organizations became more woke. So this was the time to, you know, you hit the iron whilst it's hot.
Right, exactly.
So she said, okay, let's talk about food. Let's talk about why you think there are less Black food focused or less African food restaurants or establishments in the UK. And can you do a recipe video for us that we can share? Do it on your YouTube channel and let's share. So I did that. That was great. That was like producing content, but having it, you know, almost partnering with somebody else, which I like doing. I think you have a greater reach when you do that. I love working with people. So I did the red video on my YouTube channel, and I mean, I rejigged my YouTube channel last year. It had been inactive for about 5 or 6 years.
Oh, wow.
So, I refreshed it. That video has done really well. And I recorded it in a way that was quite engaging and really full of storytelling. It did really well. So that video and the recipe I wrote along with it, plus the photos I took, really grew legs because when I wrote the article for Amex, we were able to reference that video.
Oh, nice.
We were able to use photographs I had taken the year before but never had time to use. You know, so we had the Amex article. A few weeks later, I did a Red Red workshop with the Guild of Food Writers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that went incredibly well, incredibly well. And we did it virtually. I mean, I had wanted to do an in-person workshop with them. But again, COVID happened. There was a downside, but the upside was it brought us closer and it made something possible. It was thoroughly enjoyed. We had people, authors such as Elizabeth Luard. I don't know if you know her, but she's a British writer.
Okay.
You know, she's in her 80s. She attended and she had really good things to say about it, which, you know, I'm really chuffed about, chuffed about. And then a little bit after that, I got contacted by, it was a member of the Guild of Food Writers who was looking for something for the week junior. You know, like I said, Black Lives Matters, Strike the Iron Off the Pot. People were looking to highlight, you know, to add more diversity. So we started off with the Kelewele thing because I recommended plantains, you know, for food. It's very easy. Couldn't find a great photo. And they said, look, what about your Red Red? Because I had the photos.
Wow. You know, so that sounds like Red Red was your theme.
I said, Red Red gave me wings last year, you know, in the most unexpected way.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
So I wrote an article. I had a friend who, you know, her kids, you know, pointed out my article in the magazine. So I had friends sending me photos from London. I hadn't even seen it. And they linked to my video. So I've had a lot of people coming to my YouTube channel saying, I read your article in the week junior. And honestly, it's a great recipe. It's a great video. We've had a lot of good things.
That's amazing. And we should... if you can, after this, maybe share pictures and a link to the video so that when this comes out, we can share that as well so that more people can get into Red Red. But as you were speaking, actually, made me wonder, because, I forgot. Well, I did not forget, but I guess the intensity of that moment has sort of, especially with everything else that's going on in the U.S. lately, has sort of escaped my mind in terms of how voraciously people were looking for, so, you know, quote unquote, diverse content. And I wonder in your conversation, especially that first one where you were interviewed about why Black food was not as represented in the UK landscape. Like, what was your response to that? What was your general response to that? I'm curious.
I had said, listen, my feeling, and I'm going by feelings because I don't have the data. I haven't done a massive amount of research, you know. It's my observation and these are my thoughts. But the market is owned and controlled by certain people who have the upper hand. So I think there's that. I think people like listening to people who look like them.
Yeah.
I think also there is less access to capital. So I think it's a combination of those which makes selling African food, you know, with a lot more infrastructure, it can be a hard sell. So I think a number of these contribute to that, and I do believe I answered along those lines that I find that all too often we have some blonde bombshell who may travel to Zimbabwe and for a month and come back with the most amazing, you know, book deal on African cuisine, and it's not merited. I mean, come on, who spends a few weeks somewhere, or somebody else can actually sell, they can secure a book deal as an expert in Nigerian cuisine before they even travel. You know, the publishers just have faith that they'll do it. Whereas people who are qualified, you know, they'll just say, well, there aren't any Nigerian chefs, or there aren't any people who know enough about Ghanaian food. And you wonder why they so confidently state these things. It's because they're speaking amongst themselves. They only want to hear from people who look like them. So I think this Black Lives Matters have made people more sensitive to this. And I think people who are speaking out more, like, I don't know if you followed, but Zoe Ajonyo, has been very outspoken. When she took over Nigella Lawson's Instagram, that feed went black, y'all. You know, for someone who wouldn't have known, they would have been like, what the hell happened? You know, she went there. And I think we have to do it because we are otherwise unheard, muted, ignored, and unseen. And unseen. I think it's just people were not sensitive to it. So there's a combination of things. Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate that it took what it took to have people, you know, all of a sudden open their eyes, I guess, if you will. Anyway, all right. So that was last year. You actually did quite a lot. I guess I don't know if you sensed that as you talked about it, but you actually did quite a bit.
I think we always think we haven't done much until we look back and start taking stock. So, you know, here's a lesson for everyone. Look, what you focus on increases and it magnifies. So focus on the wins, because there's always work that never saw light of day. There's always so much that never sees light of day. It doesn't mean you haven't won elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, so
that's a good lesson. Even for me, even like I haven't taken, usually by this time, like I do vision boarding, and actually just reminded one of my girlfriends over the weekend that we need to do a virtual vision boarding. And usually by this time I would have done it, but I've kept it off because I think, to your point, just in some ways there's a fear of looking back and thinking like I didn't do much last year in terms of all of the plans I had. And but I'm sure when I, you know, take the time to take true stock, there'll be stuff that I will have, you know, will come up with and be like, wow, it wasn't so bad. It wasn't so bad. So it's a new year. We are what, 11 days or so into January. What are your new plans for the upcoming year in terms of the African food space?
Oh my. So I haven't done my planning and vision boarding yet. But I'm always working, you know. I'm just one of those people who I always end up putting too much on my plate rather than not enough. So I have been working on a food memoir. I mean, this is something that it was on my plate and somebody had been on my back, you know, more like a mentor, but it's a colleague from the Guild of Food Writers. She's been on my back since end of 2019 when we're talking about it, because I thought, you know, I went around, a lot of people have expected an African food book from me, you know, just because of the work I do. I think there will be one, but it's not something I want to be done or written by just me. It's not possible. I mean, I'm just one person, Africa's entire continent.
Right.
That has to be the work of many people.
So it's the intent is for it to be truly like African in terms of covering the continent.
So that we can own it. You know, it's not something that should be owned by one person. How arrogant would it be? That's just me. I mean, somebody else will pop to two countries and they'll write it. It doesn't sit well with me. So I had mulled over idea upon idea upon idea. Where should I go? And then I would share stories and memories, you know, with colleagues in the food space. And then one person said, look, why don't you do a food memoir? And I said, oh, okay. I like that idea. Yeah. I like that idea. And then I sat on it for 8 or 9 months. Because, you know, when it comes to writing, you have to just write. You have to, at some point, you have to stop thinking and just and write. Just because write, I thought, why would anyone want to hear what I have to say?
Oh, you How have a boring. Lot to say.
You know, so, yeah. So I've started writing.
Oh, good.
I've started writing. It's a work in progress. I have started writing. It's taking a lot. So that work has started, and it will be 100% my own.
Yeah.
You know, nobody can write my story before me. It will be 100% my own. So I have that on my plate. Last year, I had planned to do some kind of African food symposium or exhibition, which it didn't happen. It didn't happen. I didn't feel like I had enough. No, you know, it takes people. It takes teamwork to do these things. So I've chatted to my friend, a friend of mine who has a lot of experience in putting exhibitions together. She actually does work for ArtX. So she's given me some tips, and she said she's seen some exhibitions before and they just lacked the storyline. So she said, if you focus on one thing and build up a storyline. So I thought, okay, let me do round two. So let's hope that happens this year.
Let me know if you decide to do, especially, I mean, if you did it, I'm sure it's probably in Lagos. But if you wanted to do something in Accra, definitely let me know. I would be open to working with you on that, just because of stuff I'm trying to get done in Accra as well. And I think that would be an interesting component of that. We can talk about offline. But
okay, thank you for that, because working together is always great. I mean, I have to say I need more friends than anything. I need more friends and colleagues than anything, because my life is so busy. I mean, that was my plans in the African food space, but you know, outside of that, I am a person. I have a family. I've got 4 kids, right. And you know, I saw stars last year in the pandemic.
I can only imagine.
Many parents around the world can relate that pandemic brought a lot of us to our knees. I mean, I don't think homeschooling is my calling. As much as we had to do it, it was a hard year. All consuming, everything went to the kids, even my laptop. You know, one device isn't working, so my laptop went to one child, which meant I was supporting them for, you know, 75% of the day, and then just had wee hours to do my thing. It's it's been something else, but we moved forward.
Yeah, definitely. We move forward. One question I'm asking everybody, especially because of how daunting last year seemed, and maybe even some bringing some of that energy into 2020, as we wrap up the conversation, is like, what are you most excited about? Like, I want to have you in your inspiration, happy feels. When you think about the upcoming year, what are you most excited about? It can be with your food work or what you're seeing in the food space in general.
Yeah, look, I'm most, you know, the end of 2020 brought in a lot of surprises. I had intended to do things, they didn't happen, but then partnerships and collaborations came about.
Yeah.
You know, which meant, you know, I was earning some money that I hadn't think I would earn. You know, so I'm looking forward to a lot more of that. I'm looking forward to, I think people are now finding a way to cope with this
right.
thing. and people are moving forward. So I'm really looking forward to doing a little bit more, perhaps even in the content space, find a team rather than do everything myself. Yeah. You know, I've got a few savings that I can spend here and there, you know. So try and do that. So I'm just looking forward to working with people, doing a little bit more, going further by working as a team. You know, I'm all about it.
We should talk at some point. And then finally, how can the audience support you? Everybody that's listening to your story, whether they're, you know, local in Lagos or Nigeria or, you know, anywhere around the world. How can they support? What was that?
All right. Yes, I'm ready to roll. My wish list, people. My wish list. So I am going to share links to that YouTube video.
Okay, sure.
Please watch it. A lot of the few people that have watched it think it's awesome. Please watch it and share it because it's going to help me get going. I'm hopefully very close towards ticking a few boxes on my YouTube channel so that I can actually monetize, and that will help. That will help sustain things. So please definitely watch and share. There's a lot of information there. So much information there.
Yeah.
And one other thing is, I didn't mention it, but I accidentally stumbled into the Reddit thing without, I did not mean to. I mean, and I feel like a dinosaur on Reddit, but I posted something. It got 3,500, over 3,500 upvotes overnight, 400 comments. And they basically said, start a West African food sub. So I started that and we were at about 800 people. So if there are any Reddit users out there, look up our subreddit, join it, because I actually have made it a habit to share African themed podcasts on Fridays. So I'll actually be sharing. I've shared a few of yours, Yorm.
Oh,
so I'll
actually
be doing more. We'll be sharing more because we have people who are so curious from all over the world.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, definitely. Definitely, please send me those links so I can share them out with people. Also, the Reddit, the YouTube. That's fantastic. I didn't even know. See, I also feel like a dinosaur. I stumbled into Clubhouse, and it's like, yeah. So I feel like it's a hit or miss. You know, there are sometimes I stumble into great conversations. Other times I'm just like, what am I doing here?
Yeah, so overload.
yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's I you know, they continue to tweak things. So hopefully it becomes a little bit more streamlined and easier to find the things you're looking for. Right now it just seems like a hodgepodge. You're lucky if you stumble on something that's great, and all of that. But good stuff. Well, I don't want to keep you too long. It was a pleasure to catch up with you and chat again. I'm excited for what's coming up for you. Definitely want to chat. I'm also, like you, I think I've been doing this solo too for quite a bit now. And one of the things that I really want to work on now is collaborating more with people, because I think there's a lot more we can get done, right? Otherwise, things sit on the shelf because we don't have the manpower to do it all. So,
yeah, 100%.
So, for sure.
But yeah, you do whatever it is you're doing so well, Yorm. You know, I should take a leap out of
the plane. Oh, no. Thank you. It doesn't feel that way, but thank you for saying that.
No. I think we always feel a certain way because we know how much we're putting into it. But from afar, look, even if your IG gets 6 likes, people are coming saying, man, you're getting so much engagement because people are engaging with you outside of Instagram.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. So that is, I will say, is one of the lessons I took from 2020, in that, like, if I looked at the visible engagement behind the scenes in terms of reach and whatnot that people can see is, like, you know, amazing. And then just in terms of the opportunities that come my way. And I think also, like you said, part of it was probably fueled by people wanting to be more diverse. But I got, you know, a lot more speaking engagements, a lot more people reaching out, you know, for me to be an a quote-unquote expert. Like, it still feels like a weird thing to say I'm like an African food expert, but that also happened for me in that vein. So definitely agree with you on, you know, Instagram likes versus actual impact, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. It. Yeah, this was great. Thank you so much.
It's always a pleasure chatting.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Item 13 Podcast. Item 13 is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.